Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a bonus edition of the Missing Wolves post-game podcast live stream, whatever we're calling it. I'm your host, Andrew, reporter for Zone Coverage, covering the, three teams now, Lynx, Wolves, and Gophers women's basketball. And today we have, I'm going to give him a great intro because I feel like it's undersold on, especially, you know, just like social media and stuff, of just how awesome this Wolves beat is and the leadership on it with, you know, John, Jace, Dane, Britt, and Chris Hine, who's joining me today and who has been a wonderful example and leader in that room my entire year and a half there.
Oh, you're way too kind. But thank you. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for being a great presence around the Wolves beat. It's been awesome having you there for the last year and a half. Triple duty. That's crazy that you're doing three teams like that. I couldn't do it.
You know, the athletes always talk about being like addicted to the grind. I mean, that's kind of what it is for me.
It's kind of what it is, right? Yeah, exactly.
I love it. I love being in gyms. I love being able to take advantage of these opportunities. And for a guy that has no journalism background to have this opportunity, I'm going to take full advantage of it.
That's right. I mean, getting to watch games, talk about them, write about them. Like, we're all very lucky at the end of the day to be able to do this in some capacity, you know?
It blows my mind that after 4 years, I'm now getting paid to talk about basketball, which is absolutely ludicrous, because as I've said along the whole way, I'm just some dude, but, you know, people evidently enjoy it.
Yeah, so Don't sell yourself short.
Well, Chris, I wanted to ask you a question because this has been kind of on my mind since you moved to Minnesota. I mean, mm-hmm. You covered the Notre Dame, right? And then you went and covered the Blackhawks during the Wilds time of all we need to do is beat the Blackhawks. I mean, how the heck did you end up in Minneapolis covering the Wolves?
It's pretty actually straightforward how it happened. Michael Russo left the Star Tribune in like 2018 to go to the Athletic, which is where he is now. And that opened up the Wild job at the Star Tribune. And I threw my hat in the ring there. Somebody told me I should apply for it. I threw my hat in the ring and they liked what I brought to the table. They also liked Sarah, our current Wild beat writer, Sarah McClellan. She covered the Coyotes previously for the Arizona Republic. And so Sarah got the job, but they really liked me throughout the process. And when they had something else come open, they kept me in mind for it. And that was like this analytics job beat that we had for about a year. And then Jerry Zagoda, the great Jerry Zagoda, kind of asked off the Wolves beat after my first year there, and they came to me and said, how about you cover the Timberwolves for us? And it was kind of one of those things where it was like they were asking but not asking at the same time, you know.
You were told you're covering the Timberwolves.
I could have said no, but they did. I don't think they wanted me to say no. But I'm so fortunate that it happened that way, because, you know, covering this team and this franchise for the last 8 years has been the best stretch of my career. You know, it led to the book, it's led to this really cool community of people. It's led me to meet a lot of cool people on the beat, and it's been the highlight of my career for sure these last 8 years covering this team for many reasons.
So when you came up here in for that analytical job, I'll preface this by saying, like, I know you're a huge sports guy, like fantasy football is your thing. You're very knowledgeable about baseball. Obviously, you can talk circles around hockey. I mean, were you always like wanting to get into basketball writing, or was it something that, you know, you're knowledgeable about and it just kind of worked out?
Yeah, it was honestly like I just like writing and telling stories about sports. And that was kind of my niche, because as you outlined, I covered college sports, I covered hockey, and I cover the NBA, and I've covered the Olympics before. I've had a really varied career in that way. So I just wanted to find a good beat to tell good stories. I will say that my dad was a longtime high school basketball coach, so that I grew up with basketball. Yeah, so basketball always had maybe a special affinity in my heart. And so to jump at, I just kind of jumped at the chance to, you know, cover the NBA because I thought that would be pretty cool. You know, I always dreamed of playing in the NBA, and obviously, you know, that dream died very quickly along the way. But, you know, I always say that doing this was kind of my roundabout way of, you know, having a life in the NBA, so to speak, you know. So that's kind of
that is exactly what I've said. I hit 5'8" in seventh grade, and then I stayed at 5'8". So this is my way to be around it. Mm-hmm. So what was your team? Were you a Bulls fan then growing up, or what team were you rooting for?
You know, I was actually like a Celtics fan, as weird as it was. I grew up with a Larry Bird like highlight tape that I would just watch over and over again. Larry Bird, a basketball legend, it was called. And I had like all these VHS tapes. I'm 38 years old, so this was before DVDs became a thing in the early to mid 90s. So I would have all these tapes of like Larry Bird one I wore out, and there were like all these tapes of like great highlights and great games, blooper tapes and things mm-hmm. like that I would just watch over and over again of basketball. I mean, so just watched a lot of, and then just watched a lot of NBA, watched a lot of college basketball growing up. And then obviously like following my dad's teams was probably my biggest thing, was like his high school teams. Like at like 6, 7, 8 years old, like I was like crying if they lost games, you know. That was like, it was that sort of devotion to my dad. So my dad's high school teams were probably my favorite teams growing up, and the ones that I lived and died with the most, because it was him and his win-loss record that was on the line.
I didn't get tapes. My grandparents, for one of my birthdays, bought me an audio. It was like a book that had two CDs with it that were Bill Walton's voice overlaying the mm-hmm. CDs. And it was just radio calls of NBA moments that you could like read along with in the book. And I kid you not, those CDs like got worn out from being
absolutely
so much. So it's
crazy, because when you didn't grow up with like YouTube or you know, just access to all these videos on your cell phone, it's like the couple things that you had, whether it was a couple DVDs, CDs, VHS, if you just wore those out
because there was nothing else. Like the spine of the Michael Jordan book I had was just mm-hmm. shots. I had a Hakeem book that was so worn out that like pages I had like scotch taped in. It's such a different world now.
It really is.
Well, let's get into Wolves stuff. I mean mm-hmm. you mentioned your book. I wanted to start with Ant one, because that book was phenomenal. I mean, my wife and I listened to the audio book all the way up north every time we went this summer, and it was wonderfully done. My favorite vision was when you're telling the stories of Ant's kind of cohort and family sitting around restaurant tables, and then I get to picture Chris Hine at the table with all of these like very bombastic Atlanta natives. It was a good image for me to picture.
I had dinner. I had dinner one night with a bunch of his old high school or his old football coaches.
Yeah.
And just kind of sitting around and hearing them just tell stories back and forth all night was one of the treats of reporting out the book. I think we were there for like 3 hours that night or something like that. And they're just swapping stories the whole time. And I just had my recorder down in the middle of the table. I just let them go, you know.
That's kind of what I thought, is you would just sit there and be like, "Well, the floor is yours, everyone."
I'm gonna have to really sort all this out later, like who's speaking and saying what. But like, man, it was entertaining as hell, and I got to make sure I try to capture some of this in the book for sure.
Oh, those were my favorite moments of the books, was knowing mm-hmm. that you were the one talking to these people, of like, man, Chris is just putting himself everywhere for this thing. And then knowing the flights you took for those books too is obnoxious, because I think in the appearances I've heard, you undersold a little bit how much work went into that, because man,
it was a blur. I'd say like, you know, close to 45, 50 interviews total, I feel like. I drove down to Atlanta last summer, you know, once summer league was over and everything. I took a couple weeks off, and then I got in my car, drove from Minneapolis to Atlanta, got like an Airbnb in Atlanta for a month, and just lived out of that and tried to report as much of it as I could. And that's what you saw. That's kind of what it was.
I mean, it's why the book's so good, because you can tell all that blood, sweat, and tears went into it. Ant, though, coming into this year, I mean, this is his sixth year. This is the same year Luka was in 2 years ago when he went to the finals. Same year Shea was in 2 years ago where they had the number one seed. I kind of believe in a lot of those shticks of like, you know, players don't win it until they're 27. Sixth year is the first kind of glimpse of like what their peak could be. Just what are your thoughts on Ant going into this sixth year? Because I feel like it's going to be one of those crucial moments for him.
It is. It totally is, because now you've had the taste of deep playoff runs for 2 years in a row. You're not just happy to be there anymore. And how much is he going to be dissatisfied with coming up short again? And just what was the summer like for him? And how did that motivate him to really work on his game? And how is it going to motivate him to do some of the things that, as we've been talking in training camp the first couple of days, it sounds like the team is going to want him to do, namely get out in transition with a little more intention and force and defend with a little more effort and consistency. Those are things that, for as great as Ant has been for the first 5 years of his career, those are two areas that I think we can all agree have been inconsistent. He can be a great on-ball defender. Off-ball defense has always been something that he struggled with. Moving off the ball, getting out in transition, all these things are the areas, the little tweaks that he can make to really take his game to another level. And I wonder just how much he will be dialed in to that this year. You know, it's easy to sit here in training camp and say he was motivated all summer by the Western Conference Finals losses. You know, he feels like he's equal with Shea, whatever you want to say, right? We'll find out in 3 weeks when the season opens. And the other thing I'll say about Ant, though, is he has been really good every year of his career when he has tried to address a part of his game that he feels like needs addressing. He's been pretty good at addressing it and coming back the following year and making it better. The 3-point shooting last year is a great example of that. Like, rededicates himself in the gym, says, I'm going to be one of the best 3-point shooters in the league, goes over the summer, works on it, comes out, he's almost a 40% 3-point shooter last year on a very high volume.
Yeah.
So that's a big credit to him and his work ethic and the people around him. But I just hope for the Wolves' sake and for his sake that some of this stuff, especially the defensive stuff, isn't so ingrained in him 5 years into his career that he can't change it around a little bit. And I think that's what this year is going to be about, is some of these things that he's let slip, some of these little habits that have become, you know, that we've noticed in his game. Is this the year that he can turn those around?
And I mean, the vibe I got from it too is a lot of the things that they're asking him to do are more, they're not going to be as easily rewarded as like you're shooting 40% from three and you're on the Steph Curry traffic.
Yeah.
You're not like, it is drive to the rim hard on a fast break. Like, you're not going to get the ball every time you drive hard. Defend hard, especially off ball, because I mean, there's a reason there's compilations of Ant getting cooked off ball on YouTube. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see how he does perfecting things that don't show up on ESPN, which I feel like he's been really good at. You know, I am sure that he is going to come in this year with a two or three kind of closing moves, or I'm sure his ball handling is going to be pretty solid and he's going to get some oohs and ahs, but like 5-10 games into the season, is he still going to be as dedicated to the things that don't get him that like immediate gratification? Am I crazy to kind of worry about that, or do you feel similar?
No, that's a great point. And I really hadn't thought of it in those terms. Because these are things that aren't necessarily going to show up in the box score. You playing better defense is not really gonna, you know, you're not gonna get a lot of plaudits for that. Maybe you might be in all defensive contention if, you know, the Wolves are the two seed or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. I think offensively, I think this is where the, you know, the sacrificing, so to speak, has to come. And we've seen him. I think he's done a pretty good job in his career so far of managing kind of the double teams and everything that comes with that, the need to give up the ball and being okay with that. We heard him kind of complain last year, middle of the season, that memorable game after the Celtics game, when he was complaining about all the double teams, and he came out the next night and had like 50 against the Pistons. But I think overall he's done a good job of not letting it really get to him too much, especially in the playoffs. Yeah. And that's one reason why they've made these deep runs each of the last two seasons. But I think to your point about this is not stuff that's going to get rewarded, running in transition to space the floor and maybe opening things up for your teammates, that's not something that's really going to show up in the box score, right?
Yeah.
Cutting, moving more off the ball, like taking the attention with you as you space the floor, as you move, and that maybe opens things up on the floor, that's not going to get rewarded all the time, right? And so that sort of stuff, can you do that sort of stuff on a regular basis? Stuff that's going to be beneficial to the team overall, but you're not going to get a bucket at the end of it, or you may not get a steal, or you may not get a block shot. So I think that's a great point. Is has he gotten to that point where just the winning, the winning being the motivating factor behind all this, is enough and not numbers?
Which that's when people talk about like Ant's maturity level, right? Like that's where I feel like it'll show up. Like, though every great player gets to that point where it is, you know, they like almost have that like limitless taking the drug moment where their eyes are open to like, oh, we're going to win a lot more games if I'm just cutting. And then it usually follows. But Ant has just been, I mean, every year of his career, he's so good at saying the right things, and he's so good at like everything else that it's hard to like knock him. But I am going to be really interested in this, if it lasts 5 games or if it lasts, you know, 50-80 games. It's just, you know, the other thing that I thought was really interesting is, you know, Finch and the team kind of resetting their fast break mindset of like Mike gets the ball. Do you feel like that's a sustainable thing too? Because Julius and Ant, they are traditionally they really want that basketball.
You know, I think well, first of all, I mean, Mike's going to be on the floor half the time, right? So they're going to have to deal with the other half where he's not on the floor. So right away, I mean, this isn't going to be just what they do on a night to night basis. There's a couple of things with this team and the core of like Ant, Jaden, Nas, and things like that. And just, I'll believe it when I see it. This is one of those that falls into the bucket of, I'll believe that they're more intentional and wanting to get out and transition more when they actually commit to doing it for an extended period of time. So I'm skeptical. I'm entering the year skeptical that this is going to be the way moving forward. I just am. You're asking Julius and Ant to, especially Ant, to break a huge habit. It's not a bad habit. Like, it's just natural. You just go get the ball, right? So fighting that instinct, I think, is going to be big for him. And then the next part of it is you got to get down the floor. You got to move. Like, you can't just be walking up the floor. Even though Mike's got the ball, you can't just be walking up the floor yourself. You got to be moving. So that's the other end of it, is you can't be conserving your energy. You got to be moving. You got to be spacing the floor, seeing what's open, trying to, you know, create. Again, maybe people follow you down the floor and that leaves Jaden open, right? And Mike hits Jaden with a pass, and Jaden can attack the rim one-on-one, which he's very good at in those situations, where Julius finds a mismatch in transition. And part of that is because Ant got down the floor and the defense was drawn to him. So that's the kind of stuff you're talking about. I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical.
I think the skepticism is fair, because almost all 4 years that I've covered like this team, whether it's writing or whether it's having credentials and kind of being in there, it seems like things always go really well during preseason and training camp. I mean, I remember 2 years ago, it was ball movement was looking great. Everybody's sharing it. I think it was like the second game. It's back to like cat and ant, just, you know, ISOs half the game. I don't know. I think that's the difference between them like having a real chance to win a championship this year and them just kind of having another really good season, good playoff run, and then it's just over. But Chris, I'm going to get your thoughts on a couple other things, but first I do have to pay the bills. So we are going to go to a couple ad reads. Well, hello. Thank you, Livestream Andrew. This is Ad Read Andrew. And today we have Firehawk Construction and Remodeling, the presenting sponsor for the Missing Links podcast. Firehawk Construction and Remodeling strives to inspire people to follow their ideas, working with respect and understanding to create a quality, tailored result. Firehawk Construction and Remodeling, located in Blaine and serving in the North Metro area, is here to help you with your building and remodeling needs. I can say personally, thanks to Firehawk Construction and Remodeling, I have a beautiful deck in my backyard and countless projects that I started, they finished. Get started on your new deck or remodel today by calling Isaac at 763-710-5686. And we're back with another ad read, this time for Pence Homes, the presenting sponsor of Hitting the Hardwood Network. From the best tools and technology to transparency throughout the entire process, Nate Pence and the Pence Homes team is the top choice for buyers, sellers, and is proud to support you and your home ownership goals. Get started today by calling 612-308-1122 or by emailing info@pencehomes.com. And shout out to whoever showed up to Nate Pence's open house the other day and mentioned my podcast. If everyone could just swarm Nate Pence with Missing Links, Missing Wolves, Hitting the Hardwood feedback, that would be great. Because then he knows that his sponsorship is working. Same for Isaac over at Firehawk Construction. Those guys are the people who make this possible. So we're going to keep doing it. And as long as you guys support them, you're supporting us. So, Chris, I mentioned it before the break here, but, you know, big picture, like Wolves season, what are your expectations? And I know you've probably been asked this on every podcast you've been on, but like,
I've been on a ton, to be honest with you. Yeah. So it's
you're a Dane more regular.
I mean, I've been on Dane's appearance. Yes, I've been on a ton. I mean, Daily Delivery for the Star Tribune, of course. Anyway, continue.
Oh, I was going to just say, like, I've been pretty bullish this offseason of, like, I do think the Wolves are my pick for the 2 seed just because everyone else is going to be figuring it out. I think the Wolves will probably start the season like 31-10, and then maybe it's 21-20 to finish the year just as teams get better and playoffs get tighter. I don't know if I believe in, like, a championship run yet with this team, but I do think they're going to be, like, a really fun, really good regular season team. Where do you kind of have them sitting right now in like the pecking order of the West? And what do you feel like their potential is? Insert eye roll.
Right. It's just tough because I always hesitate to handicap this just because I'm always like, I don't know at the end of the day, what do I know? You know, like I don't really value my own opinion and takes that highly. I'm more of a reporter than I am a take haver, you know? But I will say that my general take, which kind of seems to line up with the consensus, and I never really like to be in the consensus with stuff, but is that they're like in that second tier. I think Oklahoma City and Denver are I think Oklahoma City is except as one tier. Denver is its own tier at number two, and then the Wolves and like the Rockets and even the Lakers, maybe. I would put the Wolves like kind of at the front of that, though, like third. If I had to pick a seed for the Wolves to finish this season, I would probably say third. That would be where I would place my bet. I do think, to your point, that they could be a very good regular season team this year now that they don't have to spend half the year just figuring stuff out like they did last year. So I think they should be able to hit the ground running while other teams may be going through that process. Like Houston, for instance, Yes, Houston is probably going to play great defense, right? They're probably going to be a very good defensive team, but they just lost their point guard. They're integrating Kevin Durant into the mix. There's liable to be some sort of feeling out process with Houston that maybe as good as they were last year in getting the two seed, maybe they take a step back in the regular season, but they have the eye more on the postseason. So figuring it out for them is going to be the mantra of the season. Whereas the Wolves are going to be continuity, consistency, establishing an identity from day one and not trying to figure out your identity by February. So I go third because Denver with Jokic, they always seem to win a ton of games. Doesn't matter, right? Oklahoma City, I feel like, maybe they won't be as dominant in the regular season as they were a year ago. Maybe there'll be a little bit of a championship letdown that, you know, in the regular season at least. But I just think the way they play defense and just the talent up and down that roster is going to carry them to a lot of wins. So I go with the Wolves third. That would be where I would put them.
I mean, you touched on it like that. Denver's going to be good. I guess my hold is just, you know, Mike Malone is such a good coach. I don't know what it's going to look like. I think Jokic is obviously going to be awesome. Again, Jamal Murray, if he's healthy, is always great. The bringing back Bruce Brown, bringing in shooters like Tim Hardaway Jr. is like,
yeah, an awesome I think they made great additions in the offseason. I think, you know, even with David Adelman, like they took the Thunder to seven games, and if not for a hamstring injury to Aaron Gordon, you know, does that look different in game seven? So to me, I mean, they were a game away from knocking off the eventual champions. The Wolves were not that close.
No, even
without those roster additions. So in my mind right now, Denver did enough last year to go ahead of the Wolves coming in. Combined with what they did in the offseason.
Do you feel like the Wolves did enough to kind of address the OKC of it all? Because, I mean, continuity is great, but they still really don't have that second, like, attack ball handler, unless Rob is just magically great. I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to see them getting past OKC. What do you think, though?
I don't think they're better than Oklahoma City right now, but I also don't think at the same time that you should be making major moves and affecting your roster for several years based on one team.
Yeah.
So I think you have to try to take both a short and right now, I think the Wolves, they can't be taking much of a long-term approach with this roster because you are trying to maximize Anthony Edwards as he enters his prime here. But you have to be taking at least a medium-term approach with the roster, I feel like. And so you can't be sacrificing that to just push all in to try to beat the Thunder this year. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I think they've been fairly prudent about that and keeping their eye, one eye on the present and one eye kind of, you know, 2-3 years down the road. So when the Thunder may not be as powerful of a juggernaut as they are right now, as they will start entering some big contracts in years to come. So I don't think that if they played the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals again, or meet them in the playoffs, I would still favor the Thunder. I think the playing in transition more will help with that, because I think that's one way that you just beat a team that is great in half court, is to just not let them set up their defense in the half court. And when we have the Wolves, who are like 27th or something like that in generating transition opportunities, like look at the Pacers. I was looking it up today for an article. The Pacers, I think, were, I want to say, 7th in generating transition opportunities during the regular season. So the Pacers were wired to play that way.
Yeah.
That's why they had more success against the Thunder than the Wolves did, for instance. Stylistically, they just played a better version of basketball that, for that particular team, was a better matchup. But I will say, I think one thing you can't underestimate with Chris Finch and his tenure here is continuity.
Yeah.
And if you look at Chris Finch's tenure, this is year 6 for Chris Finch, right? Year one, he comes in mid-season, team's a mess, just trying to figure things out, figure out how to access the building, all that stuff, you know, like figure
get his thumbprint to Anthony
Edwards and Kat, right? So year one, you're just trying to get your stuff implemented. Year two, the roster changes. It's the Pat Bev year, right? Roster changes. You got to figure out what the identity of this team is. They start 4-9, right, that year.
Yep.
But by January 1st, they had figured it out. And in the new year, they had the number one offense in the league leading up to the playoffs. So they figured it out. All right. So Tim Connelly comes in. Massive trade. Rudy yep. Gobert comes in. They need time to figure that out with Rudy and Kat. And then Kat gets hurt. So that process gets pushed back several months. At the end of the season, they start to figure it out. And they'll tell you that end of season and in that playoff series against Denver, they really started to figure some things out. That leads to the next offseason, and you have roster continuity. They bring largely the same roster back. And what happened the next year? They're fighting for the one seed in the West the entire season.
Yep.
So now you're rinsing and repeating this, where Chris Finch now has a roster that he has figured out, or the roster has figured out what is what works best, how to play to its strengths, and how to get to the roster strengths, specifically as it relates to Julius Randle. So now history would tell you, you give Chris Finch year two of the same talented roster, it looks promising. It looks promising. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the reason for optimism.
I love that you bring up the Pacers, because I feel like, I mean, even when the Wolves played them, their like just pace really messed with the Wolves. I mean, they had the game that they won where Obi Toppin yep. is just hitting fast break threes every possession.
Yes.
And
yeah,
like if the Wolves can harness some of that, maybe not for an entire game, but if they can like do it for the first half and then kind of rely on like Finch's adjustments to get him through the rest of the game, I think that would be huge. I mean, the other point you made of just the continuity, I mean, Finch was talking about it at his exit interviews of like, he really had no clue what to do with Dante for most of the season. It sounded like Dante was just roll hopping and plugging yeah. holes the entire year. Mike's injured, Rudy and Julius. I mean, it's been categorized how long it is to, or cataloged, I guess, how long it takes to get Rudy kind of comfortable and new teammates comfortable with him. It sets up for a season that might be a lot of fun. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, I'll say. I think no matter what, it'll be interesting. And the fun thing with basketball is all of our answers will be, we'll find out all of our answers at some point. They do have to play. Yes. I think the last topic I just wanted to get your thoughts on is Nikhil leaves. Obviously, that leaves a hole in the roster. Just, you know, if you had a pecking order of who you think maybe gets the opportunity first, or who you think has the best chance of winning that maybe eighth spot. And then I'd also like to get your thoughts on, do you think this rotation's actually going to hit nine and a half players, or do you feel like it might be back to eight and that's just the way it's going to yeah. be?
That's another one where I say, I'll believe it when I see it. That's another one of like getting to nine guys seems like it's taken a long time for Finch to get there. The way he talked at the end of last year and the way he's talked at the beginning of this year, it seems like that's coming right on a more regular basis. Mike's minutes will be in the low to mid 20s, right? We assume yeah. on a everyday basis. That provides the opportunity for Rob. We'll see if, you know, I'm wondering if there's going to be a plan for Mike in terms of the back-to-backs this year. You know, does he take the back-to-back one end of the back-to-backs off, and that even provides more of a runway for Rob in those games when Mike may be resting. But I think the leader in the clubhouse to grab the majority of those minutes is TJ Shannon. That would be my assumption from day one. Maybe not the full complement of what Nikhil played, which was, you know, around 25 to 30 seemingly every night, but maybe the 15 to 20 range of those minutes. And then the other 10, you know, I don't know how we'll see how Mike Anori and Finch kind of draw that up and how they plot out the rotations and things like that. But my guess would be TJ gets the most of those minutes with Rob in second, and then Jalen Clark gets kind of more, maybe more situational spot minutes where he takes the other team's leading scorer for like 4 or 5 minutes, you know, something like that. That would be my guess going into the season, what it's going to look like, kind of a 9.5-man rotation. But we could get a week into the season and they've lost 2 or 3 in a row. And next thing you know, the rotation's getting tight because they need to win a game. Like, that's just kind of how it goes sometimes.
It's so fascinating how they handled the offseason with point guard, because, like, it's obvious they want to give Rob a chance. Like, there is no plan B. It is Rob, and if it doesn't work, maybe there's a trade down the line. Maybe there's, you know, Dante all of a sudden is a little better at creating for himself off the dribble. I mean, who knows? But I keep thinking throughout, you know, everyone asking about TJ and all of the TJ talk, I just kind of keep thinking of, like, Jalen just doesn't make mistakes, though. Like, he's so sound on defense. Correct. On offense, he's not going to turn the ball over. And that's just a Finch guy, right?
Right, exactly. And Finch has even said that that's, you know, one way that young players earn minutes is you don't screw up. Unfortunately for Rob, he plays a position that requires a lot of decisions, and that means more opportunity to screw up. And when you're just trying to win games, you're trying to figure things out, and he's a rookie, it just led to a kind of a bit of a, not that it's like Finch dislikes Rob, it's just that he coaches to win games. And I think for a lot of the season, it just wasn't, he just, you know, Rob was making too many mistakes or whatever, and they just couldn't afford to keep rolling them out there. I think the dynamic is different this year now, though. I think the dynamic of this team this year has to be that in order to be the idealized version of themselves, they have to get Rob Dillingham playing at a consistent level by the end of the season. And in order to do that, you have to provide him enough minutes and opportunities to do so. And you have to let him screw up. And you have to let him learn from the mistakes. And you have to not ruin his confidence. You have to give him the leeway to just go out there and play free. That if he does have a bad game where he makes a couple of turnovers, his minutes aren't going to get cut the next night. Like, you have to give, I think you have to give him a situation like that. Say, Rob, listen, you're going to go out there and you're going to play 15 minutes. You're going to play, you know, and you're going to play 15 minutes the next night, no matter how much you screw up on night one. So go out there and play free, go out there and take open shots. If they're there, don't worry about making or missing them. You're going to get the opportunity to show what you got. Yeah, I think you have to hand them that kind of situation.
I would just add that Chris Finch, if for some godforsaken reason you're listening to this, an extra strength aspirin before games helps with stroke prevention. Because I think there's going to be some moments with Rob where Chris Finch might be on the verge of popping a blood vessel.
These are the growing pains, though, right? It's the literal growing pains. But I think, to our discussion earlier, if this team has a prayer of beating Oklahoma City in the playoffs or just advancing far in the playoffs, no matter the opponent, having Rob Dillingham activated in a playoff series is one way that this roster looks different and becomes different than a year ago. Just is.
I mean, he has... Whenever someone gets drafted, right, you're always looking for that, like, elite skill. His ball handling, his ability to kind of snatch that ball back in the mid-range, get into the paint is, I mean, it's special. Like, if he can just cut turnovers, shoot a little bit higher percentage at the rim, I mean, it changes a lot for this team. But 20-year-old point guards don't have a really good track record of being good right away. That's a position that now more than ever seems like it takes 2 or 3 years. Chris, thank you for hopping on the pod. I do want to give you the space. Anything you want to promote, anything you want to say, any platforms you want to stand on. If you need a soapbox, I will provide one for you to stand on as well.
Appreciate I just like it.
To give everyone the space to promote anything they have going on.
Yeah, I mean, just the if you haven't gotten the Ant book yet, you know, as Andrew so kindly referenced before, I put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this book, and I would love it. I think anybody who's a diehard Tim Rolls fan is gonna love it. I really do. It gives you a lot of his backstory. Half the book is basically his life before the NBA, and half of it is his life in the NBA. And I don't think you're going to be disappointed whether you read the hard copy, whether you get the audiobook. I really think you'll enjoy it. Read it in advance of the season. You know, Christmas will be not too far down the pike here. You know, never too early to start thinking about gifts for your favorite Timberwolves fans in your life. So, you know, that's the main plug is go get the book if you haven't gotten it yet.
Well, and I'll keep shouting it out because I know what you put into it and you deserve all of the success from it. So, Chris, again, thank you for hopping on. I appreciate you. And we'll be back with, oh, gosh, it'll be a hard post-game stream on Saturday with the Nuggets being blacked out everywhere. But we'll talk box scores at least. We'll be live right after the game finishes up here.